Hello and welcome to the National Campus and Community Radio's Industry Podcast. This is episode one of a yet-to-be-named podcast series. I'm the executive director here of the National Campus Community Radio Association, Barry Rook.
And I'm Patrick Grimshaw, the project coordinator on the EDDS project here.
And my name is Luke Smith, and I do learning and development here at the NCRA.
And this edition of the podcast is brought to you by the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Coming up on this week's show, we're going to talk with Patrick a little bit about the Earshot Digital Distribution System. We've got industry news from all over the world. Did you know the llama is back? We're going to connect with Tyrone from Radio Regent in our member spotlight about youth programming. And Betty McArdle joins us to talk about the Grassroots Radio Conference in Portland. So there's that and a bunch more. As we mentioned, this is our first episode of the show. We don't even really have a name for it, and we had a call out and ask for some names. Is there something that you were leaning towards, Luke, that you enjoyed?
No, they were all a bit poor, actually. I was a bit disappointed, to tell you the truth. I was hoping somebody would have a great brainwave and save us from hours of navel-gazing to come up with a name, but no, we didn't hit any.
So we're a bit behind on that sense, right? So, and the same idea, there's a couple of really neat ideas, and we've had people talk and give us some suggestions on what they want covered, ideas of some of the topics that could be presented, some radio-named ideas, which are kind of neat, but it's not really a podcast about radio. It's a podcast for people in radio, and we're hoping people don't take this and decide they want to air it on their radio station, because that's definitely not what it's about.
I mean, don't get me wrong, our sector often has pilots on the shows where they, you know, you get some spotty teenagers are going on there and they're talking about XYZ for an hour and they have no idea what they're doing. That's very campus and very community radio, so I feel like this is very in keeping with the culture that we support.
Exactly. And if you see The Office, we're just as full of posters on the walls and our own makeshift little setup here of it all. So yeah, I agree exactly with that. So if you have an idea of a name or something like that, that would be great. You can email Barry at ncra.ca and send that along with us, and we'll hopefully have a name. And who knows, if you're interested in imaging or not, we can do that right now. I've got a couple of DJ radio scratches that go between segments, but beyond that, we're still building and getting started here. Hopefully by the 15th week, when we wrap up season one at the end of May, we'll have things sorted out pretty good by then. We'll continue on as we get started here on this. Let's bring in Patrick to talk about EDDS. You joined us how long ago?
I joined you about a year and a half ago.
Right. And that was through a program where you came in because it was post-secondary education and learning how to adapt to technology and workforce and stuff like that, right?
Yes, the idea was that we would get young adults, so we would train them in technology and put them into small businesses to basically try and get them to adopt new technology.
And you did sort of like a rock, paper, scissor with our other coordinator, Yasmin, and you landed with the Earshot Digital Distribution System. So can you tell me a little bit about what that is?
Yeah, so the Earshot Digital Distribution System, or the EDDS for short, is an online database designed to get Canadian music to campus community radio stations across Canada. Compared to mailing or emailing currently, it's designed to be simpler and just more streamlined than what's currently available.
And this is because stations were and are still getting just dozens of CDs a week, which they're not being accepted with, right?
Yeah. So we did some research and we found, you know, it was costing something like $800,000 to $2 million per year to sending CDs to stations that weren't accepted. So we figured it'd be easier just to remove that and just build something ourselves.
And we're now like 2 years into development or so?
About a year and a half into development.
And we're looking at phase three. And what was phase one and phase two?
Phase one was getting most of the groundwork set up, getting just account types in and making sure it worked. Phase two expanded on that a little bit. We were hoping to get independent artists in during that, but didn't quite make it. But we've kind of got the system up and working at the moment for record labels and that represent two or more artists.
And this is also the funding side of things there. So if we wanted to, we could turn it on and charge people, but we're not charging people right now, right?
No. Currently, it's free until December 31st, the end of the year. We're still trying to get people in and using the system, and, you know, making it free helps with that generally.
And there's uptake. We've had some uptake, but maybe not as much as we've been hoping for, right?
No, it's has been speeding up a little bit, but it kind of comes and goes.
So there's how many stations right now that you have signed up for accounts?
I believe we have 38 stations that currently have accounts in the system.
That's good. And then label-wise, artist-wise, there's like 100 or so artists on there and 600-700 songs available at the moment?
Yes. So we've had about 1,000 songs uploaded in total, and 600 of those have been made available so far.
So you mentioned there was the different phases, right? So phase one and phase two were to set things up. What is some of the functions that phase three are looking at?
So phase three's kind of got a good number of stuff. So we're looking to add an account type for independent artists so they can start using the system. One for show hosts so they can search and find music for their shows. We're looking to add in functionality so we can have multiple languages in the system. We're adding notifications where basically you can get information about who's uploaded, who's downloaded, and what kind of stations have done that.
So how does the show host thing work? What's the theory behind that?
So the idea behind that is that the individual or group that's currently managing music at the station may not necessarily know the specific music that the show hosts want. So if they're into something obscure like Celtic rock, for those reviewing the music before it makes it into the library, they may just listen to like, okay, that's rock. And it allows, with the show host having access, it allows them to...
I think discoverability was really the key word for those ones that are the experts in their field to be able to discover the right content that, say, someone who oversees all music in the station might not understand and recognize what is good quality programming.
Yeah, that's the idea.
There's been some bigger changes just of late. Some people may have seen the documentation that went out, but we've signed an agreement with our counterparts down in the States.
Yeah, so we've recently made an agreement with the National Federation of Community Broadcasting in the U.S., We're looking at College Radio Association as well, but that's still in the works. And we're potentially looking to move the EDDS into being available in the U.S. as well as in Canada.
So it'll be a whole North American, nationwide, maybe even worldwide solution for music to get into the hands of radio stations.
Yeah, basically.
And if people want to reach more information, where do they go?
If you want to reach me, the best way is by email, which it would be EDDS@ncra.ca.
And this portion of the podcast is around industry news. And the idea of the section here is just a quick little snapshot of a handful of stories or topics that have come up in the last 2 weeks, things that we thought we might want to share with listeners that are related to campus community broadcasting, whether it's training and development, interesting things happening in research, things that are sort of in line with what happens with the day-to-day work that volunteers or staff have an involvement with. So a good example is congratulations to First Peoples Radio, or FPR. Element FM in both Ottawa and Toronto has officially launched on October the 24th. So they're two brand new Indigenous radio programs that are set to serve the two metropolitans. So congratulations to them.
What was happening out in Vancouver? Because our listeners who may be familiar with the sector may recall that the reason why these frequencies have come up, because you're about, you're thinking, wow, a new station in Toronto, whoever thought they'd see the day. It was actually the Indigenous radio stations there had collapsed. They lost their licenses, but those spots were then reserved specifically for an Indigenous group to come up and replace. And they did. There was a bid. These folks won. And now we're seeing these stations really come to life. And I think Vancouver was won by, the bid was won by a different organization. I don't know if they've launched yet.
Yeah, so what happened was the whole single network that was supposed to cover all of radio collapsed. There was a call out and there was a question of whether it would be done either individually, city by city, or another national network. And it was decided, well, the national network obviously didn't work, so they're trying station by station. There's five in total, I believe, that happened, and these, to my knowledge, are the first two that have been launched. So that's good news there. I'm not sure about the other three and when they're coming online, but I'm assuming shortly if we've seen the launch in both Ottawa and Toronto.
Yeah, we're pretty excited. It really creates and carves out a space to make sure those voices are heard within their own community. It's very important work.
Speaking of other things that are happening in the areas, Waze, have you heard of Waze, the group that helps
like
you with
the driving thing?
Driving yeah. app. Yeah, they've just launched a beta version of what they call Waze Audio Player, which allows users to listen to a whole bunch of audio platforms and all that while they're driving. So it'll tell you to take a turn coming up. It'll tell you that there's a cop across the street who's trying to catch you for a radar. And then it'll return you to some sort of set of music. So it's kind of like an integrated driving app along with music. Bell is amongst the radio owners groups using it to help power their traffic.
Yeah, they're trying to push more listeners. I mean, to be honest here, if you hook up a Google Maps, I prefer Google Maps. I find that they updates most frequently. You just get this lady shouting at you. And I mean, that's fine. I feel like when I drive with my mother, it's a pretty similar experience. But the Waze, really what it is they're trying to divert people to specific channels away from the typical AM FM dial on the car. Because as we know, I mean, you know, Nielsen had a report out in June that showed that outside of the home, the car is one of the biggest ways. I think it's like 40% of listeners listen to AM FM in the car. So if they can nail down the providers, I mean, we're seeing new smart cars off the lot being pre-built with certain digital players already in there. They're kind of trying to cut out the AM FM and really lock you into certain channels. So it's not surprising that Bell is behind this.
And the majority of people under 30 don't have a AM or FM receiver at home. And the only time that radio is being listened to is in the car. So it's all changing, and the digital dashboard of the car has been a hot topic for the last little while in the radio side of things, so it'll continue on. Do you have some industry news?
Yeah, on that note, actually, the Nielsen report from June, does say, 58% of Canadians listen to radio at least once a week. I mean, that's not ideal. That does jump to 70% for folks over 40. And I think, the reason why I bring this up is that there's been a lot of talk around the young people of today. I believe I fall under the millennial age category, so you can blame me from everything from the collapse of mortgages to wedding vows to you name it, we've caused the end of it. And radio may well be one of those things. So what we know is there's been a big spike in things like smart home devices coming out. The Consumer Tech Association did a study just this week in Canada and found that 15% of Canadian households now have a smart device. It does help that every time Amazon releases a new device, they slash their prices. Infinite Dial, which is a Canadian study, a few months ago put it around 8% of households. So it could be anywhere from 8 to 15 is really what we're looking at. And that's a big deal. I do have a radio. I don't think it works, but we listen to Alexa at home. Like, that's my device of choice when I'm, walking home and I'm doing dishes. I've got a little dot by the kitchen sink, and that's what I tune into. And it automatically locks into Spotify. Spotify has 87 million paid subscribers. We're one of those 87 million. They dominate podcasting. They dominate streaming. And I think for the community radio sector, we need to find ways of entering those markets. How do we get into these smart devices? How do we get our spoken word programming onto Spotify? There's a huge Canadian audience. And that's where the young generation is. You know, there was another study by Music Watch, which is a consumer research and analysis firm, just this past week, and they found that only 18% of 13 to 24-year-olds love AM/FM or would recommend AM/FM. I mean, that's like less than one in five. I mean, I think even that's optimistic. But at the same time, over 78% would recommend Spotify Premium. So I think there needs to be some work done here to address this younger generation. Radio still is by far the biggest audience. But as people age, that younger generation is, they're on devices and they're not necessarily tuning in. And by the sounds of the way Waze is going, they may lose the ability to do so in the car anyway.
And we're seeing numbers still in the high 80s of all people listening to radio, especially the latest reports coming out of the States are saying that, you know, 88-89% of consumers are listening on a weekly basis to radio. Now, you're only losing 1 or 2 percentage points. That's down from 96% in 2001, but it's dropping. And the reason it's dropping is because the traditional listeners are still remaining the same population. It's just the younger individuals are not as engaged or not as interested in mainstream commercial media. So it brings in a really different aspect of where the industry is going.
Yeah. I do want to quickly mention that the US study is looking very rosy on radio. The same study, but for the Canadian audience, it was only around 58%. So it's not doing as well in Canada. I think maybe our Canadian community radio folks need to do a bit more work to engage with these multiple platforms.
Continuing on in industry news, we're looking at relocating. Well, we're in a building that's 100 years old and a heritage building. There's a 26-story building going up across the street. They're about to change this into a 27-story building. They just knocked down another one and cleared out, again, right across the corner from us. We're in the process of relocating and looking for another spot in the downtown Ottawa area. We want to remain close to our partners here as well. But we also know other stations like WDCR and CKVS, the voice of the Shuswap, are looking to move out. CKVS has been in an old heritage building that's about 98 years old, which was converted from a school into a community center. Now they're looking for some information. And we actually will talk with Brian, the executive director at CFRO, Vancouver Co-op Radio, in one of the upcoming episodes here to talk about their relocation efforts and the incredible process that took to leave from the Lower East Side to a new location to have their original place revamped and brought back, which they could return. So it's a really interesting story. So that'll come up in some of the future ones as well.
My favorite place is actually Glen Ingram with CICK and Smithers. They have an old train car that they have converted. So I don't know if maybe we can pop up a train car in front of Parliament and just camp out there, but we're keeping an eye out for some good options. Now, one of the things I'm also keeping an eye out is Bill C-86. It's still early days. There is, of course, a chance the House will rise before this gets anywhere. But it is one of the bills that the Liberal Party of Canada has introduced to address labor law in Canada at the federal level. Now, radio is federally regulated, so we would fall under this, and they are proposing changes to things such as personal leave days and the amount of vacation days for folks over 5 to 10 years. We don't know the details. More importantly, the details may well change as it goes through the various stages in the House of Commons. One of the great things about our current location is that when we step out and look left, we can actually see Parliament. So we're mere steps away from where all of this stuff is being decided, and we'll keep you folks posted as it comes along.
Did you know Winamp is back?
Winamp. It really whips the llama's ass.
I am. That is an unfortunate turn of phrase. Yeah, yeah. I was never a fan of it. I wouldn't encourage anybody to use Winamp.
There was a group. It closed a couple of years ago, and there's been a group continuing on development. And finally, the hosts or the original producers decided that they were going to make an update of the whole sector. So they've re-released a new one. Please, as radio hosts and programmers, as Luke said, do not use Winamp on the air to broadcast. It's not really a secure platform. And if you want, we are sharing information along with this whole podcast here. Anything that we've mentioned with regards to news stories and so on, we're putting up on the podcast page on the Members Only website under episode one. And we've got a list of a huge chart, which I just collected from the Grassroots Radio Conference in Portland, that outlines about 30 different playing devices and all the different costs and features and so on. So although Winamp is back, please don't bring it up if you can avoid doing so on your station.
We're also clearly not sponsored by Winamp. I think that's certainly an evident fact. It's up to you folks to decide who you want to favor. I personally have not had a great time with Winamp, by the sounds of it, neither of you. But there's also other providers out there that we know haven't done so well. So yeah, use your discretion, reach out to other folks and see what they think.
And finally, our friends at the French Association, the ARCS, are hosting their conference from the 8th to the 11th in Quebec City. So we wish them all the best. They're doing an industry focused with the music industry in parallel, how important they are. And you did hear from Patrick earlier on with regards to what we're working on for the distribution system. So that's all in the way there, and we wish them all the best. So that's your industry report for this first week of November 2018. One of the goals of the podcast here is to highlight some of the amazing work that our members are doing. And I was lucky enough in August to catch up with Tyrone down in Toronto at Radio Regent as he took us through a walk of the station and talked a little bit about all the work that they do focusing on youth.
Yeah, so in terms of Regent Park focus, like the youth side of it, we focus a lot on journalism and just ways to teach young people different media tools and different ways of expressing their views on things going on in the city or personal things. So that could be through music or newspaper, but the radio seemed to be the thing that everyone gravitates to.
And we're in the radio studio here. Can you tell me a little bit about how this has come together? Because I know there's a bit of an interesting story behind that.
Yeah, so my involvement started in 2004. And that was back when we were on CKLN 88.1 FM, which was located on the Ryerson campus. And back then, everyone had to go there and do their show, but we were the only show, or one of the only shows, I think we were the only one that were broadcasting through the internet to them. So sending a signal out, and someone on their end would grab it. And it was like the only syndicated show, I believe, at that time, off-site. And so all the young people would cram in this tiny little room and we would just talk about all kinds of things, and we've had many interesting guests at that time.
When you're talking about working with youth, what would you suggest is a really good first step if you're, say, a radio station that's not involved with youth or looking to expand the work that they're doing? What are some of the techniques or tactics that you've found that have worked well to connect?
So because I've been here, I'd say, so it's 15 years, so things have changed a bit. It used to be, what's your favorite radio station? And now it's become, what's your favorite podcast? So, or even YouTuber and things like that, because some of them do the kind of radio setup and podcast that way, or live stream. So we just ask them, what are you listening to daily? What are you watching? Like, what kind of things are you interested in, and why are you interested in that? And a lot of them tell us they want to do similar things and as those people that inspire them. Like podcasters and things like that. So just kind of asking, what do you listen to? What do you watch?
So it sounds like, from your perspective, almost any station should maybe have a youth wing.
I think so, yeah. I mean, because that way you can watch them grow. They can teach you things as well. We've learned a lot of people here have more insight on what's going on with technology, the young people. So it's good to just have young people around all the time.
And I'll use myself as an example, just because I can. I started at 15 at a community radio station. I walked in. I was told, hey, come have a radio show. Yeah. My friend said, come down to CKLN and play on this radio show. Well, I'm 15 years old. My mother's going, you're not going on a train to Toronto on your own. He suggested, what about your local station? I went to CFRU at the University of Guelph, and I just did my 19-year anniversary of my show, which has been going since then. So I think from the youth perspective going through the system, I think I'm
a example of some interest that happens, and I'm sure you see hundreds more throughout the years come through here, which is an amazing opportunity and really quite a neat option.
Yeah, if you look at like our stats, we do see hundreds of people in the time we've been doing this, maybe even more than that. mostly young people, and I just think that having youth being a part of the radio station has been such an important thing for us, and it's really exciting when you see them get older and they continue doing it, or they go off and join in broadcasting in their career lives and things like that. So
for those stations that are listening, go start knocking on doors and talk to some groups, talk to some schools, and see what options there are, because as you said, it really does, that media awareness training can lead to some amazing ideas and creations and people and opportunities that really support the community that they're in. So.
And when we started, we also didn't just do the radio station. We would go to schools and bring in recorders and things and help edit podcasts with young people and just getting them kind of interested in journalism and media.
Hi, everybody. My name is Betty McArdle. I'm the executive director of Community Media Assistance Project, fondly known as CMAP. I've been helping to organize a large conference of grassroots radio stations this year. It's called the GRC. 22 years ago, another nationwide organization called National Federation for Community Broadcasters was the go-to place for those with community radio stations. But they sort of changed their emphasis on what they wanted to see happen. It was called the Healthy Stations Initiative. And what they wanted to do was essentially get rid of volunteers and make it more professional. But several of the folks who have community radio stations didn't want to go that direction. They wanted to keep it grassroots with volunteers and stuff like that. So they broke off and said, we need to start our own conference and our own movement. And that's how the grassroots radio conference movement began. And it's been around for 22 years. There were 2 years in that 22-year time that there was no GRC. Other than that, it's been all over the country, the United States, and very successful, very well attended, very well appreciated. But sometimes there was a lot of inconsistency from year to year. And maybe some of the ones weren't too well organized, and people felt kind of cheated that they spent all that money to travel someplace, and then the conference was kind of a bust. So last year, we put together some folks who had been organizing these conferences for several years and formed a loose-knit group called Grassroots Radio Conference Association. And we're trying to keep some consistency from year to year to year through this association. We've got a checklist for potential hosts to look through and see, well, maybe we can't do that, or maybe perfect for us. And we also have a guidebook that helps potential hosts to get a little more detail of what is expected of the host, what support there is for the host, and other kinds of details like that. So it was very successful for this one, first time we've been doing that process. Aha, I'm American, I said process, not process. And so we will be doing the same for the following years.
If someone's interested in attending, what are some of the types of programming that is available when you come?
Well, that depends on the host each year. This is not decided by the association that I mentioned. It's decided by each and individual host as they organize. We've got like an abundance of fabulous presenters, and it's everywhere. I did one on organizing the organization, which is about governance, management, policies, and those kinds of things, which, hippies don't usually think of that, but it's very important to have those things in place to protect your license. That's kind of a mantra, protect your license. We've also had several on fundraising and innovative programming, sources for finding programming, and lots of kind of camaraderie with people who've not met each other before saying, yeah, we got to keep in touch and trade ideas. Other kinds, we're going to have some tech stuff tomorrow. We're going to talk about RBDS, which is, I don't know if Canada has this, text readout on your radio. Some other stuff like that. We're also doing a session on emergency preparedness that is presented by some people in Point Reyes, California, where they had some huge fires last year. And Richard Dillman's going to talk about what they did before any fire came about to be prepared for an emergency, and also what they did during the emergency. Here at GRC, we feel that community radio is the place to go during an emergency. They are in touch directly with the emergency people, and our programming doesn't come from a satellite. We're up to date and in touch.
And I guess finally, if people were interested in learning more about the new association or some of the work that you or your members have been doing, where would they go for information?
The association doesn't really have a website yet, but GRC does. And anything that the association comes up with will appear there. As a matter of fact, that's an excellent idea. I need to put the checklist and the guidebook up on the website. It's a long name, so it's grassrootsradioconference.org.
I had a great time at the Grassroots Radio Conference in early October in Portland with about the 80 or so people that showed up to the conference, and we'll be airing some other clips of audio captured there over the next couple of weeks as well. And a friendly reminder, registration is open for the Station Manager Summit, which is being held this January 18th and 19th at CITR in Vancouver. You can learn more information at summit.ncra.ca. And we're well into planning the National Campus Community Radio Conference, which is happening in early June at Ryerson University and the radio station The Scope. Some more information will be coming on those later on. This takes us to the end of the first edition of the Industry Podcast, brought to you by the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Hopefully by next week we'll have a name and some fun imaging. Keep those names coming along at barry@ncra.ca, along with any feedback on the show. Our Earshot Digital Distribution Song of the Week is coming up now to finish things off. It's Jay Eimer and the album Your Perfect Matador, released in early 2017. And here are The Walls Are Pages. Thanks again for joining us for this edition of the Industry Radio Podcast here from the NCRA. And we'll see you in 2 weeks.
There's an old wood church on the water down here where the headstones date 200 years. A steepled tower with a broken bell where some village punk wrote, "Go to hell." Every Sunday at high noon, you can hear somebody laughing. A long black car out back by a pile of tires. It's a chicken coop now with bailing wires. Tagged in red upon that hearse, God is dead and the chicken came first. Ooh. Wow. School was a Jesuit station where they took all the kids from the reservation, broke their souls in the name of Christ. Now a painting on the wall of an eagle in flight. Sometimes a picture's worth a thousand.
stuck on the shore where the village punk wrote Kill War. A steeple tower with a broken bell where the village punk wrote